You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Visit bpn.fm to discover more.
So we have Alice Brooks, who is an amazing cinematographer. Her resume includes In the Heights with John Chu, that was released this past summer, Tick, Tick, Boom, which is in select theaters this week and on Netflix starting November 19th. And she is the cinematographer for the upcoming film version of Wicked, starring Cynthia Erivo and Ariana Grande. I have been so excited to talk with her for so long, and I can't wait to have this interview. Hi, Alice.
Hi, Mason. Thank you so much for having me today.
Thank you so much for being here. I'm so excited to get to chat with you about films. So can you walk me through how you got to where you are working on such huge film and TV shows like Home Before Dark?
So when I was, I grew up a child actor. I lived in New York. I did lots of television commercials, almost 40 national television commercials between the ages of 5 and 10. And when I was 15, I went on my last interview for a movie called While You Were Sleeping with Sandra Bullock. And I interviewed for the part 7 times. And the audition was in Santa Monica, and we lived in the Valley in Los Angeles, and it was rush hour. So my mom and I went for a walk on the beach in Santa Monica, and in my heart, I knew I didn't get the part. And I said to my mom, "Mom, I don't want to be an actress. That's your dream for me. I want to be a cinematographer." And I looked down and I saw this feather. It was gray and white, and I picked it up, and I have it. I carry it with me all the time. It's in this broken frame, but it's just the reminder of the start of this dream that I have been living. And I focused on still photography in high school. I lived in the dark room. I went to USC to film school, and where I met John Chu. And John and I made a short film while we were in college called When the Kids Are Away. And it is a musical, and John and I bonded over our love of musicals. It was 2002 when we made it, and it was before Chicago had come out or Moulin Rouge. So it was before the renaissance of the movie musical. And I was so excited that John wanted to make musical movies too. So then over the years, over the last 20 years, we've done a ton of projects together. We did a series for Hulu called The Legion of Extraordinary Dancers, which is, we did it in 2009, and it was one of the first web series. Now you don't call them web series, they're just series, but it was a show about these dancers and their superheroes, and their powers were their dance moves. And we started working with Christopher Scott, the choreographer from In the Heights at that time too. And the three of us really started developing a language and a flow and a collaboration to the way we worked. And we did 30 episodes of it over 3 years. And we really learned how to tell a story through music and dance. And then we kept making movies, either together or apart. And John asked me to do Home Before Dark, and I did that, and then In the Heights.
Yeah, and in the Heights, one of the most popular shots is Usnavi in the window and the dance scene going on in the street. And that, I wanted to ask you a question about that. What's your process of creating these iconic, complex shots to fit into the movie?
You know, it's interesting because while we're doing them, I don't think of them as complex shots, but as I'm asked questions and it's clear, like they are complex. And what we learned on the Legion of Extraordinary Dancers is that we learn to be fearless. We learn to try anything and take risks, not in terms of safety, but in terms of creative risks and try new things and we had nothing to lose on the LXD. We got to invent our own rules, and if we messed up, that was totally fine. And we learned a lot then. So I think I learned on that show that creative risks are the things that end up being the most rewarding. And so be fearless in the face of material that comes up and figure out how to tell the best story possible. And sometimes those are tricky shots.
Yeah. And there's several of those that are throughout the film. Like there's one at the salon where you zoom in, but then flip around and it's in the mirror. and there's several of those throughout all of the films that you've done, and I haven't seen Tick, Tick, Boom yet, but I'm so excited to see what you've done with that film. But there was also a few hidden cuts where most people wouldn't notice them, and I just wanted to see how much you are involved with the editing and cutting together of those shots.
I have been very fortunate enough to be able to work with this wonderful editor the last, we've done three projects together so far. We did Home Before Dark, In the Heights, and his name's Myron Kirsten. And we have this really wonderful, wonderful collaborative relationship. John instills in his collaborators just this wonderful sense of being a team. And then Lynn did as well. And there are, for the transitions, absolutely things were designed. So places we did hide cuts were intentional, were designed. And there are really long takes in the Heights. There's a single one-er called Champagne, where we're in one apartment, and we didn't hide any cuts. It was all one take. And so there are things that you know, working with Myron, he trusts his directors, he trusts me, and so we don't necessarily need to shoot a lot of extra shots just so he has material, because he. You know, he understood, like, Champagne, there was no way to cut out of. That was it. We either got it or we didn't, and we couldn't hide anywhere. So that was pretty exciting.
Yeah. And not on the editing side, but with that scene, Champagne, you had the actors singing live. So what was it like working with the actors and Alex Lacrimoire to create that song to make it flow into one take?
So we had a pre-record, which is when you go into the studio and record the song before. So we had been listening. I had been listening to that. So the music supervisor, Steve Gizicki, he did both Tick, Tick, Boom and In the Heights, was wonderful at getting me music as soon as they had finished the pre-record so that I could really learn the song. And so when we went, John and I, and Chris Scott, on the day before we were shooting Champagne, we went to the location, the real location of Abuela's apartment and Usnavi's apartment, and we had the pre-record and we walked through the whole shot. But then suddenly they are now live singing. I mean, not suddenly, we knew they were going to live sing, but now you're in the reality of them live singing. And our steady cam operator had to improvise, because there's this moment where Melissa, who plays Vanessa, took this pause when they're in the bedroom. And we've been going around them in 360s. And then suddenly the steady cam operator, his name's Mark Schmidt, amazing, amazing. He was able just to, like, pause and listen. He had an earwig in, so he could hear the music too. And he was obviously a few feet away from the actors as well. But he just intuitively watched and was able to draw out that shot as long as possible until Melissa felt like she was able to deliver her next singing line.
Moving on to Tick, Tick, Boom and what we can see from that. What was your favorite part of working on that film?
Tick, Tick, Boom was this very special, magical film from the very beginning. I met Lynn on In the Heights, but we've actually spoke only one or two times during that whole process. But on the last day, my agent called me at lunch and said, Lynn would like you to read his script. He's going to direct a movie. It's called Tick, Tick, Boom. It's about Jonathan Larson, who wrote Rent. And I didn't, besides being the writer of Rent, I didn't know anything about Jonathan. And so we wrapped In the Heights, and I spent the next 3 days immersing myself in the script. And as I was reading Tick, Tick, Boom, I turned page after page after page, and each scene felt like it could have been a scene from my childhood. I grew up in New York City in the 80s, and I moved from New York a few months before this movie starts, when I was 10 years old. And just like Jonathan Larson, we lived in a tenement apartment, 300 square feet, a bathtub in the kitchen. It was my parents and my sister and me and our pets. And just like Jonathan, my dad was this struggling playwright trying to break into theater. And just like Jonathan, we had our community filled our tiny apartment. We had all my dad's wonderful artist friends around us at all the time. And I think back to that time and just completely amazed that I got to be around all these artistic people at such a young age. And just like Jonathan, we lost friends to AIDS, and it was a really a scary moment in time where we were in the middle of this crisis, quite, you know, similar to what crisis we're dealing with now with COVID. And so I left New York in a few months, as I said, before this movie begins. And so New York to me will always be that. That will forever be my New York, this exact time period of this movie. And it's this vision of New York that's etched in my memory. It's that of a child, of a 10-year-old, where color and light and emotions are heightened, and where there's this blurred line between dreams and reality. And that's how Jonathan Larson is. That was what we became the jumping off point for the creativity for Lynn and I to create from, because the opening number is called 3090, and Jonathan sings about being Peter Pan. He's this childlike human who does not want to grow up because he feels like if he grows up, he will have to give up his dream. He will have to get a real job and get married and move to the suburbs and no longer pursue his dream. So, and Lynn and I are the same age. And so Lynn also has that memory of New York City at the same time. And that's what he wanted. He wanted Tick, Tick, Boom to look like. I showed him pictures of my childhood photos in my lookbook in our first meeting. And he goes, wait, these are your photographs? These aren't something you pulled off the internet? And I said, no, that's me as a baby. These are my dad's friends. There's our bathtub in the kitchen. And Lynn goes, well, you can't get any more personal than that. And we started talking about the movie.
Yeah.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFF's creator Shana Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFF's The Original New Musical from Shana Taub is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at suffsmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
So having that vision in your brain, did it make it easier once you went in and you had all these ideas already in your head? And how is that communicating that to the team?
It was, so then I started to look at pictures and different artists and a lot of street photographers from that era. Nan Golden is one of the biggest inspirations for the look of Tick, Tick, Boom. But we also had this amazing other resource, which is, you know, you, me, everyone now lives in a world where we're constantly photographed. Cameras are on us constantly, whether we like it or not. And in 1990, that just wasn't true, except it was true for Jonathan Larson. His best friend had a camera and was filming him all the time. And we have 8 years of beta cam footage of Jonathan Larson in that apartment, in the Moondance Diner, at the New York Theater Workshop, doing his one-man show, Tick, Tick, Boom. We had this huge reference. And that 1990s sort of video quality we wanted to immerse in the project. But I also had this video that I could show my team. And so I brought a group of the team members from camera lighting and grip to our offices, and I showed them the videos and I talked about Jonathan Larson, and we looked at all these photographs art department had, and I started to get them really engaged in Jonathan. And when I was making In the Heights, I knew I needed to fall in love with Washington Heights. I knew that was my job. And there's a moment during Tick, Tick, Boom, I realized my job was to fall in love with Jonathan Larson and to honor this magnificently wonderful human being, joyous, so full of life and so many questions, and someone who has these huge dreams and doesn't let go of them, no matter how much he's pushed down, he always gets up the next day.
Absolutely. So, and you, there's a, in the trailer, there was a picture of Andrew at the phone at the Moondance Diner that perfectly resembles a picture of Jonathan during his lifetime. And I thought that was a beautiful recreation of that moment. But you also had your process during COVID and you were filming the movie in the height of the pandemic. So what were the measures that were taken and how did you guys approach coming back to creating while everything else was shut down?
So we started this movie in 2019. We started prepping this movie in December 2019, and almost 2 years ago exactly. And we shot for 2 weeks and almost 2 weeks, and then we got shut down. And in those 2 weeks, the crew, it was clear the crew was completely in sync with each other. We had this amazing group of people we were working with. It was one of the best days of my life filming 2 days before we were shut down. It was just like this incredibly fluid, amazing collaboration with Lynn and all my departments. And and then we were shut down and we're ripped away from this thing that we're like so in love with making and the story we all want to tell and share with the world. And we don't know if we'll ever get to finish it. And after a few weeks, we started doing something that we called Tick Tick Zooms, where everyone from the cast and crew was invited to, 500 people on the call sheet were invited to jump on Zoom for a couple of hours. And at first it was sort of like a therapy session. It's like, oh, how are you doing not leaving your house? How are you getting groceries? How are you getting toilet paper? And then it turned into we did trivia. Then we started doing trivia. And then but it just gave us all like this insight into each other's lives, right? Like we're now seeing each other's home spaces, and Zoom was nothing that existed before. I mean, it did exist, but it wasn't to the degree it is. And then somewhere in May or June, it was like, well, I think we're going to start to try to come back. And then July, we started prepping the movie again and filming by the end of September. And we were all very bonded by this 6 month Tick Tick Zoom period and being ripped apart from each other. And then we came back and it was amazing. Almost every single person came back to the movie, and we all had to trust each other that we were going to take care of each other and be safe and take all the precautions necessary in our lives. We were one of the first full movies to shoot, and we shot for 42 days without any shutdowns. And it was a remarkable team effort.
That's amazing. So you said that you filmed for 2 weeks before the movie. Are those still in, or before the shutdown, are those still in the movie? And at what point can we see the cut between March and June?
Or March, we didn't start filming until September. So it was over 6 months that we hadn't filmed for. So there's only one complete number that we filmed pre-COVID, and that was the Delacorte Theater for the number Y. And then everything else we had shot parts of, but not full scenes. So they're really like, sometimes I look at the footage and I go, that's pre-COVID, that's post-COVID. But I mean, you can't tell.
Yeah. And the biggest question that everyone listening wants to know, what's it like to work with Lin-Manuel Miranda?
So Lin's an incredible collaborator. He comes from a theater world where the people you work with become your family. And he workshops plays. I mean, he workshopped In the Heights for years and years and years before there was ever a performance. And he brought that workshop mentality to Tick, Tick, Boom. So during prep, we would storyboard with a huge group of people. It was the production designer, me, the storyboard artist, the AD, and the writer were all around the table, and we'd read the scenes out loud, and then we'd start to storyboard and design shots. And the production designer was there, and he was able to to, you know, hear our ideas and change some set design based on our ideas. Or he was able to have models with us or photographs so that we could understand what the space was going to be like. And then the writer was there. I've never had a writer so available during prep where if Lynn came up with an idea or I came up with an idea or the AD came up with an idea, Stephen was able to incorporate that into the script. And it was this really fluid process that I believe evolves from Lynn's experience working in theater. It's not at all a film way of approaching prep. And it was the most collaborative, wonderful, generous experience I've had.
Yeah. And then moving on to Wicked, how much has already been planned and where are you guys at in the Wicked process?
I cannot answer any questions about Wicked, except for me.
I thought I was going to get it out of you.
No, sorry.
So all I get to know is that Cynthia is Elphaba and Ariana is Glinda.
Yes, you'll have to wait for more information to come.
Okay. So I had a question. So you talked about interviewing for a movie at the beginning, but how would people start to get into the cinematography world? How would they get their first interview without experience?
Well, you need experience. You have to have experience. So, I mean, my path was I went to film school. I went to USC to film school. But I got out of film school, and you get out of film school and are like, oh, great, I'm going to start making movies right away. And I got out and I realized I didn't have enough material on my reel to get any work. And so I spent the following year in what I call my graduate year, where I hung out around USC. You know, I wasn't enrolled there. I just hung out and I offered all the graduate students, I said, I'd love to shoot your thesis film. And I shot something like 20 to 30 movies that year. And actually John's was one of them. And after that year, I had like a pretty decent reel. And then from there, I was able to get an agent, although I had only done shorts. So there wasn't much to work from for my agent, but I had an agent on my resume at least. And I just shot and shot and shot anything anyone would hire me for or ask me to do for free or even like, oh, can you come over for an hour and help me film this? I would just get all the experience and learning that I could. So you don't get a job interview unless you have experience. It's filmmaking is challenging and it is a hard career path. And if you don't want it more than anything, then it's just not worth it. It has to be the thing you want and to do with your life. And you can't see yourself doing anything else.
Absolutely. And one of my last questions. So a big point that I want to hit on this season is the education of people to get into the industry and how to get your foot in the door. So is there anything that you would like to add to the conversation of getting into the industry?
Yeah. When I was, I needed one more class when I was at film school and I took this producing class, even though I knew I didn't want to be a producer. And I actually learned probably the most valuable lesson in that class. And the professor said, Hollywood is like a brick wall and your job is to get to the other side. And you'll spend years, decades throwing rocks at the wall, trying to break through to the other side. And at one moment the rock will break through, but it will be this tiny hole, but you'll see the light on the other side. And that's the moment you're going to want to quit. That's the moment you're going to want to give up. But that is the moment you must endure. You must keep going. And he said, it's in that moment that you're so much closer than you think you are.
And do you have a moment that sticks out to you when you think about that? Is there a moment that you felt like that?
Yeah, I mean, many moments. But the biggest one was about 6 months before John Chu asked me to do In the Heights, to shoot In the Heights. I said to my husband, I'm just done. I cannot do this anymore. I don't want to be a DP anymore. I don't want to be a cinematographer anymore. I want to figure out something else to do with my life. And my husband said, I don't believe that, but if you feel that way in 6 months, fine, then we'll figure out something else you want to do with your life. He said, but you have to hold on for 6 more months. And 6 months to the day, John asked me to do In the Heights.
That's amazing. So you were filming during the pandemic, but what was your first piece of theater back after the pandemic lifted, either Broadway or off Broadway?
I have not seen a show. I have a six-year-old who just got her first vaccination last week.
Yay.
And so we've been very isolated. So I, in terms of doing fun things, but that's changing very quickly. So I got to bring her to the premiere of Tick, Tick, Boom, and she went to the premiere of In the Heights as well. And so both, I mean, that's the closest to theater. But while we were making Tick, Tick, Boom, while we were doing the New York Theater Workshop section, we were sitting there and no one had seen live theater we shot that in November, I think. No one had seen live theater in 8 months or something at that point. And we all were like, wow, we missed sitting in the dark in those chairs and watching things. And so I am hoping to go to New York right after Thanksgiving and get to see something.
Yeah. So this has been an amazing interview, but is there anything else that you want to add before we wrap up?
No, Mason, this has been amazing. I love all your questions. They're so thoughtful. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for saying that. And thank you so much for being here. I will definitely talk to you soon.
Okay. Thank you.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the SUPS. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, SUPS celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. SUPS has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at supsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but
yeah.
Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.